This is Bob Tanum in the garden.
We'll have Edie on, and here she is.
Good morning, Dad. Hi, everybody. Let's see here. It's May. Did you know that? It is May, absolutely. Join the Plant Life Challenge, No Mo May. Did you know this? Every flower counts. Search on the YouTube Plant Life video and look for Why Every Flower Counts Spring Into Action Talk. So that means don't mow your lawn, let it grow wild and attract all that fun stuff. Animals? No. Actually, insects and healthy environment things. I don't know. And also, it's a little bit difficult to look through this, but the California Garden Web is a UC Master Gardener's website. It's got all the statewide events that are coming up. So I try to get some information there, but it's a little bit challenging to use, but I try. So if you are interested and you want to fish through events that might be happening at your local Master Gardeners, go to the California Garden Web. May 18th, Hedgerow Field Day in Hopland is a research center. If you're up in Hopland, you might want to look for that event if you know about the research and extension center for that information that's coming up. I don't have that information. It didn't show on that site, but it would be at the California Garden Web. Just have to click the right thing. May 19th, Graywater Laundry to Landscape in Santa Cruz. It's a Zoom meeting, so I think everybody can attend that, although they probably have some limit to it. But go to an email at Trink Praxel. So that's TRINK PRAXEL. So that was T as in Tom, RINK, P like in Paul, RAXEL at gmail.com. And that's coming up May 19th. It's a Zoom class. So Graywater Laundry to Landscape. May 22nd, Albany Perennial Herbs. It's a Ocean View Park walk. And this will be on May 22nd. So call for more information at 510-670-5645. This is the Alameda County Master Gardeners. 510-670-5645. And the meetup is at 900 Buchanan Street from 11 to 12 at the Ocean View Park. May 24th, landscape maintenance. And this will be Firescape Landscaping. That's what I'm trying to say. Master Gardeners by Sonoma County from 5:30 to 7 that day, May 24th. Give them a call for more information and registration at 707-565-2608. 707-565-2608. Or you could also email MG Sonoma, Master Gardener Sonoma, at ucdavis.edu. All right, and we've got the Vallejo Garden Club is having a meeting on May 21st from 10 to 11, more on veggie gardening. Email vallejogardenclub@gmail.com for more information and how to become a member. vallejogardenclub@gmail.com. That'll be coming up next Saturday from 10 to 11, more on veggie gardening. Saturday, May 21st, is the San Francisco Succulent and Cactus Society meeting. They will be having a guest on their show for Namibia. It's in Africa. After the Storms 2011. It's a show and tell event, and that's going to be going on at the San Francisco main county fair building, 1199 9th Avenue in San Francisco. It's in person and on Zoom. For more information, email or go to the website at sfsucculent.org. And then also, they also have their annual Succulent Society plant sale coming up June 17th through the 19th, also at the County Fair Building. So in both situations, go to their website, sfsucculent.org, to find out about their events and also become a member. Friday, May 27th, the Peninsula Orchid Society is having their May meeting at 6:30 at the San Mateo Garden Center. This is in person and on Zoom. For more information, go to their website at www.penorchidsoc.org. So P-E-N, Orchid, S-O-C for Society, .org. Marin Native Plants is having a hike on Bootjack Trail, Old Stage Road to the West Point Inn. And this is a walk for native plants in Marin County. So it sounds like a lot of fun. If you're interested and you want to get in touch with their group today, go to email for Susan Schlosser at S-C, like Charlie, Schlosser, S-C-H-L-O-S-S-E-R, 52, at gmail.com. So that's S-C Schlosser, 52, at gmail.com. That sounds like a fun hike. And I believe that'll do today. So there you go, Dad.
Hey, and on our guest list right now, we have Stephen Howard. Welcome, Stephen.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
How you doing this morning? You know, there's a lot of things that we should be doing in the garden or taking a look for. And tree experts are one of those people that are just so necessary for our normal landscaping in our gardens. But this is going to be a really rough year because of the drought, and probably if you have a big oak tree and you are worrying about SODs, sudden oak death, and stuff like that. What should we as rather homeowners look for when we look at all of the trees that are going on and maybe stressed?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it was a dry winter, and this year a lot of parts of the Bay Area, it's been kind of unusually windy, especially in San Francisco, where I spend a lot of my time. So with that in mind, you know, you get the combination of the wind and, you know, I'm really promoting mulching pretty heavily for most of my customers. The further we get into drought-like conditions, and the wind definitely doesn't help with that. But yeah, just making smart use of the water that we are planning to put down. We want to retain that as much as we can. So putting, you know, 2 to 4 inches of mulch, usually depending on the soil consistency, a little less mulch for clay soil, a little more for sandy soil. It just helps to retain the water that you have so it doesn't run off. And, you know, it helps, you know, amending the upper layer of the soil because that mulch is going to break down. It's going to turn into organic matter. That's going to make the soil more aerated, less compacted, and, you know, provide those essential nutrients to the trees that they're not getting in an urban setting most times.
That's an interesting thing. But, you know, I have a few, several friends, of course. I do have friends, you know. But a lot of them have these oak trees around their house and stuff like that. And we have sudden oak death and that type of thing. What should we, is there something we can look for that might be helpful if we can sort of catch it before it kills a tree? Is there anything there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, try to do a little research, familiarize yourself with the symptoms and signs of sudden oak death. So usually you're going to see dark patches on the bark, and there could be staining. There could be, you know, sap running out of the bark. There could be cracking. There could be sections of bark falling off. Those are all signs and symptoms that can be associated with sudden oak death. But it's hard to, you know, get a direct diagnosis without doing sampling. In any case, your treatment recommendations are probably going to be the same, whether it is or isn't, because you're going to recommend treating with a fungicide that, you know, would only help the tree defend itself against different fungal pathogens anyway. But, you know, the ones that are going to be most vulnerable are the ones that are kind of at that urban wildland interface. So, you know, areas more down in the peninsula, closer to 280, Belmont, you know, San Mateo, parts of outlying areas, or up in Marin, San Anselmo, Mill Valley, anywhere you've got native oak trees that are growing close to the native bay trees, because the bay trees can host the pathogen, and then it gets transferred to the oak trees. And a lot of times the oak trees that are going to be most vulnerable are the ones on kind of steeper hillsides with kind of loose soil, because over the years you get that soil building up on the uphill side of the base of the tree. And eventually it's going to cover up the root collar, and it's going to be stacked up against the bark, the trunk of the tree. And that's going to trap moisture. When you get moisture trapped against the bark, that's when you get decay issues and fungal pathogens transmitting through the moist bark. So I would say, you know, one thing that a homeowner can do easily is just look at the base of your oak tree. Make sure you can see the roots start to flare out. Make sure it doesn't look like a telephone pole, you know, sticking straight into the ground. And if you don't see those roots start to buttress out at the base, you can just real gently start to pull the soil away. You know, don't use like an axe or a pick or something. Maybe start with your hand and just see if you can pull that loose soil away. And then if you need, you know, help, if it's not going very easily because the soil is compacted, then you might need to bring in a professional to take a look at it and give some suggestions.
Okay. That sounds pretty much like you just have to be on top of everything all the time around as a native oak tree. So many people are promoters of many types of houses bury a tree roots and stuff like that, and it puts a stress on the tree. Is there anything warning signs about trees that might be possibly affected by poor management on the part of people who build houses on top of them?
Depending on, you know, which contractor it is and maybe which municipality it's taking place in. A tree protection plan is sometimes required, and it's definitely always recommended. Usually a tree protection plan, when you're talking about construction, ideally you're kind of cordoning off, you know, all the space under the drip line of the tree. So that's as far as the branches spread out. So that way you don't have any staging of materials or a lot of foot traffic or parking, you know, bobcats or anything, you know, directly under the most critical part of the root zone. You know, for trees, it's not just the area under the branches that is important. Those roots are going to spread out, you know, usually, you know, 1.5 to sometimes up to 2 or 3 times as wide as that crown is, depending on the species. So any construction around trees, you know, is going to kind of put them at a bit of a disadvantage. And you're going to need to monitor the health of the tree for an extended period of time after construction takes place. And, you know, it's especially true if you have to do any trenching or root cutting. You know, like say the foundation's getting put in or you're putting in some conduit or something close to the tree. That's a situation where you definitely want to bring in a professional, because there are sort of guidelines and industry standards for cutting roots, just like there are for cutting the branches of the tree. And if you go overboard on how much roots you're cutting, that's probably going to do permanent damage or possibly kill the tree, or you could even destabilize the tree. You know, if it's not perfectly straight to begin with, and then you're cutting roots on the wrong side of it, that's really not good. So, but root pruning can be done safely. There's just certain thresholds you want to stick to know that you're not cutting too much. But that's, you know, again, that's where bringing in a certified arborist would help. And
okay, definitely recommend it. Okay, Stephen, can you hang on for a little bit? I've got to take a break, and then we'll go back. And I want to talk about drought and the effect of taking the water away from a tree when we stop watering the lawn. We're going to be right back. This is Bob Tanum in the Garden Talk Radio 560, and it is KSL.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Manager for Davy Tree Service out of San Francisco. Stephen, we have a call from Vallejo on Ginger. Hello there, Ginger.
Hi, good morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a magnificent maple tree. I'm not that familiar with trees, although I have a green thumb, I think. Anyways, they're going to be doing some work around this property and in the neighborhood itself, and it seems they want to do some additions to chain link fence and extend them up and out. Unfortunately, this tree was put in a pot and given to me by a friend who died many years ago, and she showed me where to put it, and that's where it's been ever since. Now the tree seems to be in the way, and they want me to pull it up or cut it down or anything for it to be removed out of the way of the worker. I don't want to do that, and I don't know what to do. The plant is in a pot. It's probably 8 feet high. The leaves are green, so I understand there are different kinds of maple. I'm concerned that if I cut something called a taproot, the tree will die. My friend looked up on Google about trimming it, but I investigated, and I would have to trim it completely down to the thickness of the stalk. There would be no greenery left on the tree if I trimmed it. And in that case, I believe it still might die. So I'm in a push of what to do because, unfortunately, the roots of this beautiful tree have gone down through the pot and are now in the ground. And I imagine this tree may have a root ball. I'm not sure.
What's your solution to that one, Stephen?
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of different factors there, a lot going on. And I've definitely seen that before, you know, like a Japanese maple in a kind of in one of those wine barrel planters. And it doesn't take long for it to work the roots through the bottom of it and just kind of settle in. So, yeah, I mean, removing a tree like that, It was it 10 feet tall? Is that what I heard?
It's about
8 feet tall.
Between 8 and 10 feet high.
Right.
It's been flourishing. I'm not being aware of this. I've tried to move the pot. It's almost like it's in cement. I've been told just cut those two roots that have come out through, but I don't know how many tap roots, particularly for this kind of tree, might have, even if it's one. But as a little girl, I was told cutting taproots kills the tree or any plant. I don't want to lose it, yet I don't have a choice. And so my dilemma is, can I cut the pot away and dig down? There's only about a 3-inch perimeter around the tree itself where it's sitting. So it would be very hard. I've called around to some places, and they said dig down about 2 feet. Well, I don't know if that'll help, and if I indeed will cut those roots under the pot, that'll still disturb its health. So I need to know if it can be removed. Trimming it, like I said, I'd have to take all of the green foliage off. My wonderful neighbor, who's 85, was a gardener, and he said trimming it, that's not trimming it, that is cutting it. And that will maybe survive, but it'll take 10 years for it to ever grow back.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's right. You're getting away from pruning at that point. You're just kind of getting into hard cutting. And on a Japanese maple, I mean, the whole reason people love Japanese maples is for the aesthetics. And so if you cut it back to sticks, and then what grows out of that, it's not going to turn back into a natural-looking tree. It's just going to look like some thick kind of puffs of sprouts coming out of those big cuts, and never really going to look like the same like it did before. But with the roots, generally, I mean, Japanese maples transplant pretty well. You know, a lot of the bigger Japanese maples, when they're grown, you know, for sale, they're grown in the ground, and then they're dug up and balled and burlapped and shipped out. I would say if it's possible that the work could be pushed back until when the tree is dormant, that's going to be the less stressful time to transplant the tree. If it has to be done now, you know, so be it. But, you know, usually you want to try to capture at least 1 foot of root ball for every inch of diameter. So for a 8-foot Japanese maple. I imagine the caliper, the diameter of the trunk is probably, 3 to 4 inches. So yeah, you try to capture, 3 to 4 feet wide and down of the root ball. You know, for a homeowner, that's going to be pretty labor intensive. Even if you can dig that out without damaging the roots that much, you still have to be able to move it. And that's a big task as well. Is the tree in the front yard or the backyard?
It's by the back gate of the property. It gets some morning sun, very little, and then it gets midday, late afternoon sun. And people just adore it, and I tell them, don't touch my tree. The root ball, I'm assuming, possibly, not knowing, that the root ball is basically built up inside of this plastic, maybe 2-foot container that she put it in when she brought it to the house. It seems like it's very hard. And then I noticed when they wanted it cut or moved that, like I said, there's no hole in the middle of the container she put it in. There's 4 or 5 holes around the outer edge. And when I was going to do this, I noticed that those roots are about 1-2 inches wide and have pushed their way out, and then they have a skinnier root, maybe 6 or 8 feet long, that's under about 3 or 4 inches of the dirt.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be tough to really get this particular tree to thrive for the long term, because since it started off as a potted plant, I'm sure what happened, the roots escaped through the bottom of the planter, but the other roots they grew out until they reached the side of the planter. And then at that point, they're probably wrapping around and, essentially you could be starting off with kind of a girdling root situation. So you've got sort of an untraditional root structure there that you're starting off with. If you do transplant the tree, really it's going to be hard to get the roots to grow in the direction that you want them to go. Sometimes the Japanese maples can live okay, with bound up roots, but sometimes it's going to make them more vulnerable to diseases or to girdling and making it harder for the roots to bring water up. It just kind of depends on the sentimental value of the tree and how much you want to invest into it, whether you think it's going to be worth moving it or, for an 8-foot tree, starting off with, something like a 36-inch box replacement, you could get a really nice one, with a nice natural structure and put it in the right place. So, if the fence installation is going to, be in the way of the tree and the tree's not going to survive the fence being put in, I'd maybe try to talk to a neighbor and see if they'd be, willing to cover the cost for replacing the tree.
I see. Okay. Now, when do they become dormant, you said?
Well, when it's dormant, Ginger, is the best time to move it. But if this was a problem you could have done in January, it would have been a better time. You could have done almost anything with that Japanese maple in order to get it growing. I think I'm assuming that's correct. But, they're fairly easy to move, but not at this time of the year. Why do they always have to, Steve, why do they have to do these things at the wrong time of the year?
Exactly.
progress must go on.
Yeah, right. There we go. All right. I want to thank Stephen Howard from Davie Tree Service for being on this morning. And Steve, I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule, because I know this is a busy time of year for Davie Tree Service. And you're the assistant manager. And so there you go. And thanks an awful lot for being on the show this morning.
Yeah, no problem. If anybody has any issues with their landscape that they want to get a little advice on, we always have free site estimates, kind of landscape visits, and we can give some recommendations and see if any sort of pruning or maintenance or plant health care or mulching or planting, transplanting, all that kind of stuff. So we service San Francisco, the peninsula, and up to Marin, and we're located over in South San Francisco. So We're not too far away from anyone. But, yeah, our office number, it's 415-468-9180. If anybody needs help, they can call and ask for Stephen.
Okay. Thank you so much, Stephen, for being on the show. All right, Margaret and George and Henry, we're going to have to take a little break right now and get right back to you. This is Bob Tanum in the Garden Talk, Radio 560 KSFO.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
Our numbers, if you'd like to call in, the lines are pretty well open, except we're going to go to Margaret in just a second. 808-5600. Hi there, Margaret.
Hi, Bob. I have a couple of tree questions for you this morning.
Sure.
About a month ago, somebody called in about a Japanese maple, and the tips of the leaves were getting crispy.
Yeah.
And you had recommended something in the soil that it needed. That's what's happening to mine every year. I water it really good, so it's not that. And it just the tips, they get all, you know, crunched up, all dried out.
Wow.
You had said something about azalea food, I think it was, to put in the soil that stopped it from doing that. If there was some kind of amendment.
Oh, okay. Got it. That it's called, you know, the alkaline in the soil is will turn the leaves brittle like that. They're dulling. Yeah, that's what kind of just my memory is still there, but it just takes a little time to jog it around. Hey, I think your Japanese maple, and this is pretty common with Japanese maples all over the Northern California. The soil is alkaline, and you need to put some acidic kind of material around the tree. Pine needles and also the azalea rhododendron food will help a little bit. But I think I would check the watering and the drainage, because oftentimes our alkaline soil is absorbed into a tree that doesn't like our clay soil. And it will let you know by turning the leaves crispy, just like you're talking about. So
okay.
The solution is mulching is a good thought. If you've got a neighbor with pine needles all over the place, that would be an excellent mulch around a Japanese maple. Also, check your watering. Here, this is another thing. Poor drainage can also have an effect on a tree like that. So what I would do is to dig a little hole next to the tree and fill it full of water. And if the water's still there in the morning, after you do that at night, you have poor drainage. And that is another problem that you might be having, and that can turn the leaves as well.
Now, if I have the poor drainage, it's the tree in the ground. It's a little tree. It's 3 feet tall. It's one of those ones that don't get very big. So if I have poor drainage, what would I do? Just I can't dig it up. What would I do?
I would cultivate it around the ground, sort of trying to open up the root system. Oftentimes, Japanese maples have surface roots, and maybe that's a maybe by. How often do you water the tree?
Maybe twice a week now.
Okay.
It's a drip system, but it's getting plenty of water. I mounted it up like you told me to do, and put rocks all around the perimeter. So maybe taking those rocks away.
Aha, there you go. Take it away. Yeah, no rocks.
Okay.
We don't need rocks or rocks around the tree.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So open it up as much as you can to the air, Margaret, and I think you'll be fine. Okay?
Okay, great. I have one more question about a dogwood. It's a very tall tree, 20, 25 feet. It was planted about 3 years ago. It was pruned. And this year now, the flowering is only on a certain portion of the tree. And I'm wondering if that's because branches that were pruned are getting a lot of flowers.
That's what happened. You can't. Dogwood shouldn't be pruned. I don't think there's anything about it. With dogwoods, they here again is acid soil. Is they love that, but they you live in San Lorenzo, they don't have acid soil. They have alkaline soil, and you have to fight that when you have an acid-loving tree. Dogwoods love things like rhododendron azalea food, and I think if you give it some of that, maybe 2 to 3 times at this time of the year, and then maybe again in the fall.
Okay, sounds good. All right, that's what happened to that one, too. Okay, thanks a lot so much. Appreciate you.
All right, well, thank you so much, Margaret. Thanks for the call, and thanks for listening, all you people out there. The lines are open all of a sudden. Okay, fine. We'll go from there. We talked a lot about trees this morning, and there's a lot of... And Japanese maples are always on the line. And this year, I was able to have somebody help me, but a neighbor has a problem with their Japanese maple. It just doesn't have any form and stuff like that. So I instructed how to prune it. Now, it takes 2 to 3 years to prune it to be a tree that's going to make a difference in your yard. And they are meant to be ornamental, although I ran across several years ago a Korean maple that was just awesome. It was like a great big shade tree. It grew to about 35 feet. It was huge. And I've never seen a maple like that. I've not seen it since. So I'm not sure what kind of a situation you have. But anyway, our numbers, if you'd like to call, 1-415 and 808-5600. We probably shouldn't, we're not going to take a break early. There's so much. I'm working on a book, not a book, but a thing for my website on certain things I've learned about gardening and vegetable gardening especially. And one of the things that probably a lot of people have a problem with is growing carrots. And if you look at the package on our heavy soils and things like that, it says put the seed in the ground and bury it about 1/4 of an inch. That is probably the worst thing you can possibly do. Because what happens is that the clay in the soil will dissolve and sort of form a crust over the top of the seed and suffocate it before it can get to the air. And seeds are just that kind of thing. So you want to be able to so what I do is to I just usually make a fingerprint in the soil, a very little tiny trench, put the seed in there, and then just water. Because the rest of the seed will the water will take care of covering the seed, so you don't have to worry about that. In the meantime, let's go to Louise in Oakland. Hi there.
Hi. I have 2 fruit trees that I've had for a long time. When I planted all of my fruit trees, it didn't occur to me that certain species would produce better than others. Right now, I have a persimmon tree and I have a pomegranate tree. They never bloom, and of course, I never get any fruit. Mm-hmm. And I look at the same trees in my neighborhood, and they have lots of fruit. And I know if I don't have any flowers, I'm not going to have any fruit. So do I need to cut the trees down and start over with a different type?
No. Do you know the variety at all of the persimmon?
No. When I planted them about 20 years ago.
Okay. All right. You haven't had any fruit in 20 years?
Right. All I did was go and I said, I want a pomegranate tree. So as soon as I saw one, I just bought it. It didn't occur to me that some would produce better than others. And when I see the same trees in my neighborhood producing, and they're much younger than mine, something's wrong. I figure I need some new trees.
I would get a new tree. There's no reason I can think that a persimmon would not, if it is a persimmon tree, would not be bearing fruit. So, I think you could probably do a better job buying a new tree, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Louise. Let's go to Mary in Corte Madera. Hi there, Mary.
Good morning, Bob. I'd like to know the pros and cons of buying approximately a 5 foot tall apple tree now versus the bare fruit that you buy, you know, in January. Mm-hmm. Maintenance is the important thing, and watering, of course. If I was to buy one now, it looks healthy in the nursery, but why do people, you know, usually buy them bare root? Is there an advantage to that?
No, it's just because Mary, because you just pull them out of the ground, wash the dirt off, and put them in a bundle and take them to a nursery, and they cover them up, or later on when they don't sell bare root, they put them in containers. So there's not a real reason not to plant at any time of the year from a container. So I think with an apple tree, some of the best apple trees that you can grow, one is Pink Lady. And that is a very good tree for our area, along with Granny Smith. So actually, if you bought two trees, you could probably buy one that would be producing early, which would be the Pink Lady, and one would do good apples in the fall, which would be Granny Smith. So there's my recommendation. And you can, there are several nurseries around. You can go over to, let's see, are there? I don't know of any nurseries in Corte Madera. Oh, yeah, well, you've got Sloat, so you can go there. They're very right. trustworthy, and you can probably get a good advice as well, okay?
Thank you. The Fuji, then, you wouldn't recommend necessarily. I did see one that was a Fuji apple.
Fujis are great.
I mean,
it's a pear apple, they call them, so that's, yeah.
It would grow well with the same conditions. And
that
watering is twice a week if it's already growing tall at this point in a pot. Would you recommend twice a week for watering? Or
yes.
Yes, that's important. Oh, all right. Well, that's what I needed to know, and I thank you very much for your...
All right, Mary, thank you for that call. All right, you take care. We're going to have to take a little break. God, it seemed like I just got through with one. Let's go to the break, and then we'll come back. And so Shirley, George, and Henry will be right back. This is Bob Tanum in the Garden Talk, Radio 560, and it is KSFO.
You're listening to Bob Tanum in the Garden on Talk Radio 560, KSFO.
Go to Shirley. Shirley is in San Bruno. Hi there, Shirley.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for taking the call. I'm having... beets and spinach and a couple of other things that the leaves are getting these big splotches and then turning crisp and falling. Like there's something in there. It's not a leaf miner because it's not a trail. It's just a big, so it starts out with a sort of a yellow blotch and spreads until it's all over the leaf and then it gets crisp and dies.
Wow. That's a new one on me.
I was wondering, what does thrip look like? Because once you said something about thrip.
Well, yeah, well, thrip would turn the leaf sort of pale green and then, you know, die that way. Okay, let's see what we got. So we're talking about spinach and beets, as you said?
Spinach and beets were the main ones.
Okay, and the leaf just turns brown, basically, is what you're telling me. But
well, it starts out with a little spot that's sort of yellowish.
Is this on the tips?
No, it's
the center of the leaf?
Not in the center, but it anywhere on the leaf. It's not always, okay. I don't think it's the same place.
Yeah, okay. I don't really know. I've never heard of that kind of thing. So how often do you water there, Shirley?
Well, probably two or three times a week.
Okay.
You know, it sort of depends on the weather because we go from very hot to cold and windy. So.
Well, yeah. So we've had that. We've had funny weather, but that's not causing that. Those plants are going to be surviving no matter what happens on that. It almost has to be something in the roots, but then that doesn't sound like it's attacking the leaf.
There was one plant that did really well, and they all started out doing really well. And
okay.
Then little by little, they started turning.
How's the drainage in the area?
The drainage, I think, is okay because they're all in pots. I have gophers, so everything is in pots.
Okay. Now, when you water the pot, does it still grow?
The
leaves. Okay. Yeah. When the new leaves come out, what happens with that? Do they come up and look pretty good, and then
yeah,
turn?
Yeah, they start out really well, and the one plant didn't get any of that, and they're close together. But there was one that did really well. They all started out really well, but three of them started to turn.
Yeah. I think it has to almost be something in the planting mix that you're using in the pot.
Oh. But they're in the same pot.
So, okay, one looks good and the other one doesn't in the same pot?
Yeah, they started out all looking good, but then one started getting these blotches and then the other ones did. And then the beets that are a ways away, they started the leaves
the same
started
thing.
Getting
yeah.
Just spots. Not all the leaves, but like maybe half of them. And I tried Captain Jack. But
yeah, that wouldn't do anything. Geez. Do you have ability to send me a picture of that online?
Oh, no, I can't.
Oh, that's okay. Most of my listeners can't.
Yeah.
All right. So, Shirley, I really am stumped on that. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to look it up in some of my records to see if I can find out. It has to be something either in the potting soil that you're using, but then that would be almost an immediate problem, not what you're describing. Actually, you plant the seed and everything grows fine, and then all of a sudden it starts to go.
Well, I bought all the starts at the nursery, and I'm using planting mix from the nursery, and I'm feeding it alfalfa,
okay.
And they have a
anything else you're using?
Kogo.
Ah, you have another one that you're using along with the alfalfa?
Yeah, a regular.
Okay, well, don't do that. I think that's the problem. It's something you're adding to the soil that is turning into a problem. So I would just leave it alone and just keep watering and see what happens. Get to me in about 2 weeks by doing that.
Okay, I'll try that.
Okay, let's try that, and let's see what we can do. All right, thank you, Shirley, for that. Let's go to Randy in Sunnyvale. Hi there, Randy.
Hey, good morning, Bob. How are you doing? You sound a little bit tired this morning. Are you okay?
I'm always tired. When
oh,
you're 91, you get more and more tired.
you need to take that Rock Shock or one of those four-hour, those energy things, man.
There you go. All right.
Or do like I used to do, Bob. Go to Santa Cruz. Get on that roller coaster. When you come off there, you won't even want any drugs. You'll be so high.
I am scared to death, shitless about doing that on that.
Hey,
I've been there, done that.
Are you serious? I went there like...
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.